Did you know that nearly 20% of the population in Eau Claire County received food stamps in 2015? Or that around 15% of children in the county are living with some sort of food insecurity, nearly 30% classified as working poor? To be sure, statistics like these aren't specific to Eau Claire, because poverty is all around us, and often neighbors and even those who offer services are unaware of the hidden problem. In Eau Claire County, a large team of volunteers has been organizing to identify different parts of the problem and come up with specific plans to help those living in poverty and to help the community better understand what those people might be up against. Today, we'll check in with the Eau Claire Poverty Summit team, some members at least, and speak to some of those volunteers this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Wisconsin Public Radio 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. Joining me in studio are some members of the Clear Vision group and also members involved with the Poverty Summit, which is kind of one and the same. First, I'd like to welcome Mike Huggins. He is a board member of the Clear Vision Eau Claire, also former city manager. Mike Huggins, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Rich. Thanks.
Our pleasure. Lance Gurney is the co-coordinator for the Poverty Summit. Lance Gurney, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Rich.
Good to have you. Also joining us is Joe Luganville. He is a co-chair of the Kids First Eau Claire Action Team. We'll get into that a little bit more in just a bit. He's also a member of the Eau Claire Area School District Board of Education. Joe Luganville, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. Let us know what you think about the Poverty Summit process, and we'll get into more details about what it is, but basically a volunteer grassroots effort to try to identify and solve some of the challenges faced by people living in poverty. Are you a person who has dealt with food insecurity, issues with transportation? If you would like to share your story, we would love to hear it. You can call in. You can be as anonymous as you'd like. 1-800-228-5615. Your input makes this show that much better. Also, you can post a question or a comment on the West Side Facebook page if you're feeling bashful about going on the air. So first off, the big question, I guess, and I laid out some of the statistics that I found on the Clear Vision, or the Poverty Summit page, webpage, but how big of a issue is poverty in Eau Claire? And Lance Gurney, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. Well, I think it depends on what aspect you look at it. I know Joe's here and represents school district, and mm-hmm. I know over 40% of the kids in Eau Claire school districts qualify for free or reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. As a board member, when I express interest in this topic, it was aware of, housing challenges that we have in our community, transportation challenges. So mm-hmm. it's around us. It's everywhere we look. I had a conversation with someone, and they referenced those individuals downtown that they see walking the streets. And I'm like, no,
yes.
You don't get it. That's not what we're talking about. That is severe poverty, but poverty is all around us.
Absolutely.
Having to skip a meal, having to turn down the furnace because you can't afford a bill, it's all around us.
That's a great point, and that gets into some of the myths and the misperceptions that people might have about it. Mike Huggins, this is not just a city problem. I mean, of course, when a lot of people think of it, they think of the person that looks like the typical homeless stereotype or something like that. But in rural parts of the county, it might be more invisible than in the city? Is that?
Well, I think that's part of it. Like you say, many times there's the tendency to think of, homeless folks that are at Sojourner or that, and yet the problem in Eau Claire County is 47% of all of the households are income insecure and to the extent that they're literally one paycheck, one event away, mm-hmm. From having very severe types of problems. And that's spread across the county. And certainly as you look at parts of the county, as you get 15, 20 miles out, more rural areas, whether it's the small towns and villages or more rural parts, there are real issues there, and they're compounded in terms of transportation issues, access to resources. All of those things are compounded, I think, in our rural areas. And, of course, what goes on in those areas affects everyone else in the county, too. So it's not like, oh, that's rural and this is city. It all goes together and affects the quality of life for what is 100,000 people, you know, that are in Eau Claire County.
Joe Luganbill, when it comes to, you know, we hear the measurement of free and reduced lunch as kind of an indicator of poverty, but it really only tells a small part of the story. When it comes to children in the district, that many, 40% overall on free or reduced lunch, what does that tell you? I mean, beyond just that figure, what kind of issues lie behind that, or what kind of challenges do these kids face beyond just getting a little help to pay for their lunch?
Right. Well, you know, when we talk about poverty in the context of our school system and the children in our community and what challenges they're faced with, we're not just talking about students eligible for free or reduced meals at school.
Okay.
And the number that we have utilizing that is actually lower than the reality of students that are eligible for it. Once you get to the high school level, specifically, because less, you're seeing fewer students who are actually taking part in that, whether it's because of stigma or different reasons.
Sure.
But another metric that we use is the homeless program that we have. We served last year alone over 300 students who experienced homelessness. But when we talk about poverty, we aren't just talking about rumbling stomachs or a child who maybe isn't in a stable place, a stable living situation. We're talking about developmental issues. We're talking about the brain development of these children. We're talking about what we call adverse childhood experiences that these young people are experiencing every day, experiences that are going to be limiting their futures and their potential if we don't do something about it, and that will harm them in sometimes irreparable ways if we don't act as a village here. So it's a very serious problem. It's not unique to Eau Claire, but I do think one of the challenges is when I'm out talking about these issues, and many of us are, sometimes people are shocked when they hear it. And we've been talking for a while about this, but in some ways there are two Eau Claires. There's the Eau Claire that you often see on the news, the Eau Claire that you hear about, the narrative of Eau Claire, of a city that works and a thriving community for all people, and you see all the exciting development. And then there's another Eau Claire, an Eau Claire, a reality that is gut-wrenching and heartbreaking and is very difficult for a lot of people here. So that's what we have to address.
It is interesting. You mentioned the development, and there's a lot of exciting things happening, but I live in one of the communities within the city which, you know, like you mentioned, tale of two Eau Claires. Mm-hmm. It's a very different picture. So that's an interesting point. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. Looks like we had a couple people that gave it a shot, but might not have been able to make it on the air. Keep trying. If you can't get through on the phones, go to the Westside Facebook page, and we will get your question or comment on the air. 1-800-228-5615 is the number. Again, so with this stigma, we've got all kinds of there have been other kicks at the cat trying to deal with the poverty issue. The overall, in a nutshell, what is the difference between what the Poverty Summit folks and Clear Vision Eau Claire are trying to do versus every other program? You know, we've got all these stakeholders that have been focusing on things like food insecurity, et cetera. So what sets the Poverty Summit apart, Mike Huggins?
A couple things. I think, first of all, it started with a clear recognition that whatever we're going to do as a community, the answer doesn't begin with all of our different aspects of local government. So it's how do you bring members of the community together to talk about this? So that was an important part of the Clear Vision effort originally, was how to bring together a very diverse group of people in terms of geographic backgrounds, what organizations they may be tied in, trying to also draw in people that were directly impacted. That was one of the priorities. With the idea that it's important to bring together to people to talk about these issues, to let people name what they see as the problem, rather than having an expert or government define the problem, it's important for the people involved to name what they see as the issue. The other important part of the process, I think, was a very deliberate effort to go through a process that began with naming and talking about issues, but was clearly oriented towards coming out the end of that discussion with an orientation to action. Okay, we're going to do something. It's not that we're going to fix everything all at once, but we're going to identify specific concrete actions that we can take that are going to improve the situation. I think those are probably two of the things here. It was very much a collaboration. It was talking about the issues, but it was talking in the sense of having people that were directly impacted, people that were participating, having them name the issues and the concerns. And then all along with this focus of trying to build the skills of people that were involved to be more effective at solving problems and taking action. And that's very much the orientation that Clear Vision has had the last 10 years. So I think those are two things that make it a little bit different.
And Lance Gurney, what kind of participation did you get from members of the community that are actually affected by, you know, poverty or income insecurity? Because otherwise, I mean, wouldn't this process, without their participation, could this process kind of become a outside-looking-in kind of attempt to fix problems people might not understand that are that haven't lived it? You know what I mean?
Right. I think we made a consistent effort throughout the process to make sure we had people at the table that were experiencing issues of poverty. We also asked each of the action teams to go out and conduct one-on-ones with individuals. So it wasn't just the 400 people that showed up to meetings. It was the intent that we wanted to take those 400 people and have them get out and have additional conversations outside of those individual meetings so that we truly understood some of the roots of the problem. And when we put together the action teams, again, we didn't have, like Mike said, we didn't have any preconceived ideas of what the outcome was going to be, and typically you'll see that a lot in in other approaches. Here, there was no answer provided. It was up to the groups to come up, okay, what specific issues do you want to address that will maybe not solve poverty, but at least address some of the issues.
And Joe Luganville, you were nodding your head with the one-to-one. So being in a committee that or action team, Kids First, what kind of one-to-one did you have? Did you just go out and knock on doors, or how do you engage with people that might not normally come to a meeting like this?
They've been deliberate one-to-ones with various stakeholders, whether they are from government or nonprofit or education sectors, or if they're just individuals that we know who've maybe had some challenges in the past. With our action team, it really came together as just children issues. That's what our action team came together as. It was focused on children and families. And so everybody who was there sitting at that table in some way really felt that that was our priority, because, you know, families are the foundation of our community and children are the future of our community. So we had representation in those early meetings from child care, from the public schools. We had parents coming. We had retired folks from the health department. We had foundations there. And actually, for what we're with what we're looking at doing initially as a kind of our first project of this action team, it came from that direct feedback that we received from the parents who showed up. And truly, that was the most impactful information feedback that we were able to get, because, and I think that was already said, it's so important that you hear those direct stakeholders first and foremost. And no change is going to be sustainable without them helping to drive the change, and not to make changes for somebody or to somebody, but with somebody and walk with a certain community, walk with folks as we make change. So We have had continued one-to-ones, and we extend that invitation to anybody in the community who's interested in learning more about what our action team is doing, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about that a little bit later, too.
Yeah, and that another overall question, which I might already know the answer to, but can people still get involved, or is it kind of closed session at this point?
It's the idea was that people can become involved at any point in the process. As we went through the initial stakeholder planning, you know, where we had eight stakeholder meetings over a course of 6 or 7 months, it was clear that as we made the pivot to the implementation part, to the, working with the 9 action teams, or hopefully 9 action teams, that was another great opportunity for people that weren't able to come to the Thursday meetings or for whatever reason couldn't get involved. Here's another opportunity for them to get involved and to be able to get involved around a really clear direction or a clear focus with each of those teams.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We'll take our first break on the west side. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Eau Claire Poverty Summit and what's been accomplished in the year since the process was kind of brainstormed, I guess. This is the West Side. I'm joined by Joe Lucanbill. He's a co-chair of the Kids First Eau Claire Action Team as part of the Poverty Summit. Lance Gurney is a co-coordinator of the whole thing, and Mike Huggins is a board member of Clear Vision Eau Claire. Lance Gurney is also a board member of Clear Vision. We'll be right back.
Support for WPR comes from Rogers Memorial Hospital, with locations in Madison, Appleton, and southeastern Wisconsin, providing behavioral health care for eating disorders, mood disorders, and depression. More at rogersbh.org. Support also comes from the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Eau Claire County, offering Stepping On, a community safety workshop to prevent falls and stay independent. More at 715-839-4735.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about poverty in Eau Claire and a innovative grassroots volunteer effort to bring stakeholders together to try to come up with solutions or first identify the problems that people living in the county face when dealing with poverty and come up with specific solutions to try to make their lives better and make it easier for them to raise their family or to get ahead. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. The phone lines are wide open. If you've got a story to share, please do. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out the Westside Facebook page. Next week, we're going to be talking about birds. We've got Steve Bechkel, former photojournalist for WQOW and renowned bird watcher, bird expert, and also Bill Hogseth from the Department of Natural Resources will come on and answer all your ornithological questions. That's next week. Today, again, we're talking about the Poverty Summit. It's a grassroots effort in Eau Claire. And basically, I wanted to ask, and maybe Mike Huggins is best for this question, but we've talked about a little bit about what it is, but why is it needed? I mean, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of different groups that are already trying to deal with different aspects of poverty. So were they not doing the job well enough? I mean, or is this just a different kick at the cat?
Well, no, or, you know, we wouldn't be talking about this. But one of the things that I think Clear Vision has seen over the course of its work the past 10 years is that one of the consistent issues that communities tend to face around any major problem, and whether you want to make it large like poverty or you want to pick climate change or you want to narrow down and say food insecurity, whatever, that there seem to be several things that are often going on. First of all, that there usually are groups or organizations working on some aspect of an issue, but most frequently those groups aren't always connecting with each other. So there's a value in creating a space, a public space, where initiatives and agencies and organizations and individuals that are doing something have a place to connect. We've seen that time and time again as we've looked at other issues. So one, simply creating a space where existing efforts could come together, and then also tie that in with other perspectives. You know, for us, it was looking at bringing together the directly impacted that may not be involved. And to go back to one of your earlier questions, one of our surveys at the one of our initial sessions found that about 30%, 30 to 35% of the stakeholders self-identified as being income insecure. So that's some measure of, you know, of those perspectives that we were getting. So part of it was we felt creating a space where you can do a better job of connecting, I won't say silos necessarily.
Well, that was on the website.
Many times you think about that, but you have lots of groups that are doing things, but they don't necessarily connect and talk on an ongoing basis with others.
Sure.
And that's always been kind of one of the fundamental things that Clear Vision has seen about public problem solving. Let's create a space, bring together existing efforts as well as, you know, other people that may have a stake in that. So that was part of what we were trying to do at the beginning.
This whole thing seems very, very organized. Lance Gurney, how big of a role does the organization and the communication play in this whole effort? Because it seems like a lot more than just getting together once a month or something to talk.
Well, I think first and foremost, as Mike mentioned, Clear Vision's been around for 10 years. And
it's gotten accolades for its work.
And the organization has developed a very clear model on how to engage the public and increase public involvement. So trusting the model, trusting the process. Again, it was unique coming in. I've been on the board for 3 years now. Coming in, and too often you would start or go through a process of meetings, but you already had identified what it was at the end that you wanted to get to, and you just had to go through the process to get there. And Clear Vision had developed a process that is really meant to spark conversation amongst individuals around one topic. But that conversation is what basically gives rise to the issues at the end of the day that the groups want to move forward with. In terms of the coordination, it's really creating that public space, as Mike mentioned, to allow those conversations to flow, and then also to create, through our process, a framework on how to do that. We talked about one-on-ones. There's a process of power mapping. There's other components that we utilize to help draw out information and use that information to take the next step.
There were a lot of terms in here that on the website that seemed very, very group. Like if you were into a lot of meetings or a lot of this kind of effort, you'd understand it. Power mapping. What is power mapping?
Power mapping is an effort to give a topic and then start thinking about who are the players that deal with this. If we talk about food insecurity, for example, you've got Feed My People. You've got food tables.
The community table,
you've got, but there's also other agency folks, and then there's farmers market. There's producers themselves that are also part of that. So basically, mapping all of those players in one concise fashion, and then using that to engage on one-on-ones.
And Joel Luganbill, you were talking about the action team that you're on, which is Kids First, and identifying problems, but there's an action team that has to do with education. So how easy is it or how hard do you have to work to keep from duplicating efforts that other action teams are undertaking?
Well, I think it's important to know what the other action teams are doing. And actually there was a time where the action teams all had the opportunity to present what their next steps were going to be so we could all be on the same page and see where folks were going. And really the education team and the access to resources team, we're all centered around the same central issues, but there are very different steps that are being taken. You know, for our group, we really found, we could talk about anything in our group from the cost of childcare to transportation, but then it kind of became, what can our group centrally focus on that would fill a gap area? Mm-hmm. Because we do have folks from all sorts of different agencies and walks of life on that group, so we didn't want to duplicate anything. But what we really found was that for families, while there's a lot of education out there and there are resources out there, we found there isn't a lot of relationship-based support out there. And that's, you know, we found that the lack of positive parental role models and support systems for families kind of was a bit of a gap area. And so what we're proposing is our group, and all of the groups, all of the action teams had to have a project charter that basically defined who they are, what's driving them as an action team, and then at the end what they're going to be proposing first. Mm-hmm. And so what we're first proposing is to support and nurture families in need by establishing a parent-to-parent mentoring program, an evidence-informed mentoring program, basically to help address the challenges that families are facing without the barrier of stigma, and empowering them to make to create the best possible environment for their children. That idea came from parents who came to our initial meetings, because one of the first things that we talked about was you don't get a manual with this stuff as a family, especially if you're a family who is having day-to-day challenges with getting by. And to have a place to go, a number to call, a person who you can count on to help walk with you, they really felt that that would be very, very beneficial for them and for their children. So, and there are examples out there in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have anything like that here. But what we do have, which is in a different sector, but in public health, we have a parent connecting network, a mentorship network of parents in Eau Claire County who want to talk to other parents about cultivating a safe environment for their kids with partying and drinking and things like that.
Sure.
So there are some examples of it already in place in other ways, in other capacities.
Right.
But we really felt that that would be a gap that we could help fill. And our goal with it is once we have a really solid plan developed and a way that we would work with volunteers and how we would fund it, the real goal is that eventually we'll have an existing organization pick it up, or maybe one or two existing organizations sponsor it and pick it up, because we don't want to duplicate anything. And if anything, we would love to have this program work with existing agencies.
But augment. I would think that this topic, first of all, coming to a parent and saying, well, we've identified this problem, I mean, it seems like it would be an unbelievably delicate kind of a situation, because I would imagine that some parents could see it as being lectured to, you know, like the as far as parents, not the lack of role models or parental right. role models. I mean, that seems like it's dynamite that you're playing with there when you go to these parents that are facing all these problems that a lot of us can't even really comprehend.
I think what's most important is to view the direct clients that we could be working with as the real stakeholders to help us develop what this looks like.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way it's going to work. So what we're doing actually throughout the summer months is we have focus groups that are scheduled. We have focus groups with Child Care Partnership, with some families who utilize Western Dairyland services in the summer, some play groups in rural communities. So we're trying to get directly to parents. And we have some deep questions that we're going to be asking them, and some uncomfortable questions. And I don't think any of us are kidding ourselves. This is an uncomfortable challenge here when you're talking about working directly with families in this relational way. But we have to address it. It's been, in my opinion, neglected, this direct kind of connection for families. So, yeah, it's going to be central to our whole process right now to really be working directly with those parent stakeholders in different ways. So we'll be doing those one-on-ones, but then we also have focus groups scheduled, and we'll be having some surveys distributed at different sites. We have planned to at WIC, mm-hmm. at the health department, so different community sites where folks are going to be. So we're really trying to get as much feedback as we can so that the program that we create here is as responsive as it can be to the real needs that folks are facing and to the real gap that's out there.
1-800-228-5615. We're talking about the Eau Claire Poverty Summit. It's a effort put on by Clear Vision Eau Claire. The goal is identifying the challenges of people facing people that are living in poverty in the many different definitions of what poverty is. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. You just heard from Joe Luganbill. He's a co-chair of the Kids First Eau Claire Action Team. He's also on the Eau Claire School Board. Lance Gurney is the co-director of the Poverty Summit and a board member for Clear Vision Eau Claire. And Mike Huggins is a board member with Clear Vision Eau Claire as well. 1-800-228-5615. It's about a year in. And just in general, we just heard from the co-chair with the Action Team for Kids First Eau Claire. But overall, where has this process taken us? From we talked about the concept, identifying the problems. I know that there were some meetings in April and May. So Mike Huggins or Lance Gurney, how has this progressed?
Right. Let me talk a little bit about the kind of that process of October through, you know, April or May. And Lance, I think, can speak to the implementation part. I think it's important to remember when we started out, the people that came identified over 300 issues relating to poverty and income insecurity. That's a lot of issues, right?
Yeah.
And so part of the challenge was going through a process that took that initial list of 300 and how do we group and how do we talk about those. Those kind of were sorted into 17 themes. And then as we went through the process, the participants then identified 9 of those themes, of those sets of issues that they wanted to focus on. And that kind of set the stage for organizing into the 9 action teams. So a lot of the effort of that October through April was working with the teams as they were forming, having them develop a more clear mission statement, a project charter statement, learn how to do action plans, learn how to do these one-to-one relational meetings that are so important in building connections, learn how to use power mapping, you know, a visual graphic way of understanding resources and relationships. So a lot of that time was spent in those teams building those skills, building their capacity to do that.
Sure.
And then as we launched, basically made that transition, the teams presented what their priorities would be and are now in that implementation part where they're starting to, in some cases, refine and revise their action plans, get more specific, really get down to the nitty-gritty of, you know, how do you do that and who's going to do it and what's the cost and who else do we need to involve? And we're kind of in that transition place. So I would say that, the first thing that's occurred in, you know, probably the first 9 to 10 months is we've started with this very large notion of poverty, income insecurity, and 300 issues, and have narrowed that down into nine, more specific, concrete action directions that we're going to take. And the groups are just now making that transition into that. I think they've had three coordination meetings where the teams are sharing what they're doing and what they're doing next to improve that communication you talked about.
Sure.
But also to get into the nitty-gritty. What are the specific things we're going to do? Agreements, you know, other organizations, fundraising projects, whatever. They're just at that point.
Basically, in a nutshell, it sounded like you spent a lot of that time was training the Army, basically.
One of the things that, a little phrase that has kind of stuck with me, and it's we hear it a lot at Clear Vision, it was part of our planning process 10 years ago, is that for this citizen focus, this grassroots approach, it's very important to go slow, to go fast, that many times communities make a mistake when they have a problem to jump right in and this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And they haven't done that pre-work. They haven't developed their relationships. People haven't talked about why is it a problem. And so to some extent, that planning process, which I know people were frustrated with, they went, let's go do something, right, is a little bit of that going slow, being prepared, understanding how to do one-to-ones, be clear about what your charter, what your mission statement is. Know how to do an action plan. Learn to build relationships within your team and understand how to have more effective meetings. Those were the things that we covered. So we've done that kind of go slow part, and I think what we'll see are the teams start to pick up speed and excitement as they get into the doing part, the action part.
And I'm sure anyone who's gone through meetings that there's a wide range of in terms of effectiveness. I mean, sometimes it's a meeting for the sake of meeting, but other times you actually get work done. Lance Gurney, where are we now? We've got the teams trained up, and they've been raring to go. So we're working on the action plans at this point.
Yeah, I think kind of picking off of what your question was to Joe as well. We have 9 action teams, hopefully 9. And those teams are, for the most part, rather independent groups.
Yeah.
Working. We do have a coordinating committee. So, again, another meeting. But the purpose of that meeting is for each month for us to come back and touch base and make sure that we're not overlapping, that we're not duplicating that. You know, if there, as Mike mentioned, we are refining some of those action plans or those charter statements as we move forward. But making sure when we understand, okay, these 8 other groups, what they're up to, making sure where they're headed so that we're not wasting energy, we're not wasting time, we're actually coordinating with one another as we move forward and address those issues. So right now, you know, again, I think we're still two months in now, we're still refining those charter statements. We're doing a lot of one-on-ones. So those action teams are basically validating their charters and then getting ready to launch. And my assumption is following the summer, when it's hard to coordinate,
yeah,
and reach out to individuals following the summer, we will see a lot more action moving forward.
Is there a specific start and end point to this, or is it just kind of you'll know it when it's done, when it's done?
Well, the project, the summit that Clear Vision convened, launched, did have kind of a project limit. So we were looking at that going through the end of 2018. So you know, okay, we've got about 18 months of implementation. But that's, to some extent, artificial,
sure,
right? So it's just there's a defined area. We have project reports we have to provide back to some of our funders. So it has that type of ending date. But, you know, this is not an issue that is solved in December of 2018.
With that, let's take our final break. We've got a Facebook question that we'll get to as soon as we come back. I'm joined by Mike Huggins, Lance Gurney, and Joe Lugenbell, all members of the Poverty Summit grassroots effort trying to tackle the issues of poverty in Eau Claire County. Lessons that I'm sure can apply to areas outside. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Phone lines are wide open, waiting for you. We'll be right back.
Every time you tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio, you'll hear something that makes you think, feel, or understand in a new way. That's the power of WPR programs, and that's the power of your support. Our budget year ends on June 30th, and your gift right now at WPR.org really makes a difference. Thank you.
Support for WPR comes from the 14th Annual Sugar Maple Traditional Music Festival, August 4th and 5th in Madison, with artists including the Molly Tuttle Band and Parker Millsap. Tickets are at sugarmaplefest.org. Support also comes from UW-Eau Claire Continuing Education, offering a master's in professional development through education studies. One Saturday a month, the rest is online. Details at 715-836-4021.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. We are talking about poverty in Eau Claire County. The bigger poverty, it applies wherever you're listening, but we're talking specifically about an effort called the Poverty Summit and put on by Clear Vision Eau Claire. It's a grassroots effort to bring in stakeholders, community members, members of local government to identify and attack some of the problems that face people with income insecurity. If you've got a question or comment, you can give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a story to share, an example of some challenges that you might have faced living in a form of poverty that others might not, that would be some eye-opening stuff for our listeners. 1-800-228-5615. The first question comes from Glenn Frederick Krause, or it could be pronounced Krause if you're from northeastern Wisconsin. His question basically is, what sort of issues did these meetings with Clear Vision and Eau Claire Poverty Summit outline as concerns facing people with income insecurity? And in a nutshell, it looks like what has the group done to outline and address these issues? What are some of the solutions? So, Lance Gurney, take it away.
Well, I think first and foremost, the nine action teams that were created, access to resources, education access, food insecurity, housing, incarceration transition, income and job skills, Kids First Eau Claire, mental health access, and public narrative and stigma were the groups that we formed. Again, this information is also available on Clear Vision's website. So those are the teams. That was, as Mike mentioned, the nine actions that were the conclusion of the summit itself that were identified as areas that we wanted to move forward with implementation. Food insecurity is a great example. That action team is actually working in the in one of the specific school district areas, one of the elementary schools, and looking at, well, what are some of the issues? I think it's that specific school is the school that has the highest percentage of free or reduced lunch in
like the three-quarters of the students.
Like three-quarters of the students, correct. And one of the things that they identified that was mentioned at our last coordinating committee was, you know, they have that access to food during the school year, but only 20% of those that are participating during the school year continue to participate during the summer. Does the need go away during the summer, or is it what happens, and how do we reconnect with those families to make sure those students are still receiving the nourishment that they need 12 months a year?
Well, I don't mean to paint with a broad brush, but there are a lot of these action teams and a lot of the issues that were identified seem to have everything to do with connecting people with stuff that already exists. Am I missing that?
You know, if there was one word, I would say connecting. I mean, in some case, it's connecting those directly impacted with resources and assets. They may be physical resources, financial resources. They may be mentoring resources of others who have shared the same experience. So part of it, I think that connecting is a very important part. There are a number of resources. Can we do a better job of connecting those that can use those resources with the resources? Can we improve how all the different agencies and initiatives that are working on some piece of this, can we improve how they connect and communicate with each other? Because that's always imperfect, right? It's never 100%. So I think connecting, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of we can do in the community if we improve how we connect in a variety of different ways.
And these different organizations that offer these services, how are they responding when or have we gotten to that point yet? How are they responding when your group comes to them saying, you need to do a better job of this, or here's how you can do a better job of letting people know what services you offer? Because, again, I'm automatically, maybe it's because I'm so defensive about everything in my life, but I could imagine someone feeling a little bit burned by that.
I think generally the approach is, how can we do a better job?
Much more diplomatic.
And it just gets a different, because they're part of it. It's not like they're outside of the solution. All of these agencies are part of it. And in many cases, they're coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not like you have to go to them. They're already looking at how can we improve and communicate and connect in a better way. So
1-800-228-5615. We can probably take a question if you call in right now to the West Side. We're talking about the pretty innovative and really well thought out grassroots effort here called the Eau Claire Poverty Summit, and put on by Clear Vision. I'm just wondering, it's again speaking to the participation among people that are in the target population, you know, the people that are facing these issues. Do you wish you would have had more participation, Mike Huggins?
Absolutely. I mean, and that was something we looked at from the very beginning.
Because there was a survey right away.
There was a survey.
And what was the participation on that?
You know, it was about a third, you know, 30%, something like that.
Yeah.
But we look, because we know that transportation can be a challenge. We know that daycare can be a challenge, you know, and we provided those things during the summit. It's also a challenge in people that perhaps have not been involved, have not been asked prior to really believe that their opinion matters. I mean, you know, those are things as communities that we have to deal with. We have to demonstrate that it's not just an empty question, that the participation is very important. So all those things go into it, and it probably only changes over time as you demonstrate, you know, the value of people participating. But all those things go in. You know, the rural was a challenge. Yeah, right. This was face-to-face. Well, how do we do face-to-face with people that have a 25-mile drive in? And we did some meetings in Augusta that brought in people from Fairchild, you know, talking about those issues. And that's where transportation can be such a critical issue as you get out. So it's very imperfect. I wish we could have done a better job connecting online, you know, through either mobile apps or, you know, other ways of involving people in the conversation. I think there are ways we can do better at that.
That's the point about people never being asked. I think that's really powerful, because I would imagine that some people might not take something like this completely serious when they've got a lot of challenges to deal with. Joe Luganville, you're nodding your head. You're on the mic now.
No, I absolutely agree. I think that we're kind of in a good position right now with the action teams, though, that I think that now that they're specific with what they're working on doing, if people are interested, they have great ways to get directly involved and plugged in. And maybe one of the issues with the large group was the meeting time, and all of our different action teams meet at different times now, pretty much.
Sure.
Some of them meet more electronically than others. So I think there are many ways folks can get involved on a continued basis. And I think, to Clear Vision's credit, you know, while maybe, I mean, we can always use more engagement, I, as somebody who's in a lot of meetings in the community, you know, I kind of see the regular players who are at meetings like this, the do-gooders, so to speak. There were a lot of new faces at these meetings, and that was really exciting to see. People who have a lot of passion, and in a time when sometimes it's hard for people to feel like they're heard, people who stepped up and they really wanted to share their stories and share their neighbors' stories and see what could be done. That's a really exciting and hopeful thing, and I think it speaks to the heart of this community. We really do care, you know, and we don't always know how to act on that care, and I think that we're working on that. We're working on how we can cultivate a community where more and more people have access to what they need to be successful and supported in their lives. For our group, it's children, but for others, it's different topic areas. So I feel really hopeful about everything moving forward.
Lance Gurney, there are 9 action teams, and it sounded like you said hopefully there will be 9 action teams. Like, something's up in the air, but what is it like trying to coordinate? If these groups are so autonomous, when do they finally all have to come together and put their cards on the table?
We meet once a month just for the group to touch base. Where are we at? What challenges are they facing? What are their next steps? The meetings are very helpful because it allows each of the action teams kind of play off one another. Hey, we just did that, and here's what we learned, and here's what our experience was. So maybe this is something you need to think about as you move forward. So there's a lot of play back and forth. Mm-hmm. We have out of those nine action teams, those coordinating committees are roughly 15 to 20 individuals from those nine action teams that get together. And our job from the Clear Vision Board is to support them. So my role as a coordinating committee chair is to make sure that we are connecting the Clear Vision Board with these nine teams to move forward with the process.
And Mike, Mike Huggins, you mentioned funders. It all comes down to money. I mean, usually, whenever you're talking about any kind of change.
Right.
So what kind of funders? I thought this was a grant-funded kind
of
thing.
Well, no. I mean, Clear Vision received a $10,000 award, through a couple of years ago.
Right.
We used that to match other funding, and we raised about $38,000, I think, of local dollars, direct dollars. And a large portion of that, something around 19 or 20,000, we have available, to support the implementation process. Some of that for the teams, seed funding, mm-hmm. For the teams. Some of that to go into our documentation and writing up what we're doing and what have we learned from the process. So I would say a good part of the funding that we have wasn't so much in doing the meetings. As money to help us with the implementation and documentation and explaining, so we don't lose the lessons that we've learned. And I think we've learned a lot in the process.
And more to learn in the coming months, 18 months to go. Where what's the next steps, immediate and just general? Where do you hope to take this?
Well, clearly is that over the next 18 months, we're looking for some very measurable, concrete things we've done. Through the action teams, whatever that is, and we'll be coming back together, towards the end of that to kind of share and celebrate what we've done. But as we've said, this doesn't end, in 18 months. So what did we learn, and how can we improve that process? I think, based on our experience, that with all the people that have been involved, and they've learned a different way of talking and acting, that's something that feeds into the community, whether it's Poverty Summit 2 or whether it's, some other effort. It builds on that. It builds on the connections and the relationships.
You keep those skills. You don't soon forget them. Thank you all very much. Joe Luganbill is the co-chair of the Kids First Action Team with the Poverty Summit, Eau Claire. Lance Gurney is the co-director of the Poverty Summit. And Mike Huggins is a board member with Clear Vision Eau Claire. Thank you all very much. Thanks for the question, Glenn Frederick Krause. Next week, we're going to talk about what's going on in the world of birds with Steve Bechkel and Bill Hogseth. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next morning, Monday morning.